Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Welcome back, Mike Haas, Mike Cotillier, Bobby Hebert. We are here until straight up noon. Going to take a little college football traveling down that road. Mike, who do we have next?
On our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line, works for Pro Football Focus, Dalton Wasserman, who takes care of the college football scene. Dalton, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Appreciate you guys having me on, as always. How are the holidays?
Yeah, same to you, Dalton. Dalton, the big story here, certainly Sugar Bowl, Georgia, Notre Dame. I'm old enough, Bob, also Mike Haas. We saw early 80s, Herschel Walker in Georgia going up against Notre Dame. But that is two major programs now. And it was so funny to hear Marcus Freeman talk about, you know, they're talking about the Sugar Bowl and the build-up. He's like, yeah, they got a lot of players in the state of Louisiana we might want to take a look at. He was already thinking long ahead of time. But your thoughts on Georgia, Notre Dame, Georgia now with Gunnar Stockton as the starting quarterback due to the injury to Carson Beck. And Notre Dame's defense has really been very good this year. That's Marcus Freeman's wheelhouse. Your thoughts on Georgia, Notre Dame, Sugar Bowl?
I think you mentioned it with that last point. You got two spectacular defenses going at it. Obviously, Georgia's got a ton of talent and Kirby Smart running the show there. And Notre Dame's defense looks better than ever. And I'll tell you, they're amazing in coverage. I think it is going to be a tough task for Gunnar Stockton to put up a lot of numbers in this game. I think you have two teams for different reasons that want to run the football primarily in this game. For Notre Dame, it's because that's just the core of their offense, right? Jeremiah Love is one of the best running backs in the country. Riley Leonard's a very mobile quarterback who can get it done, especially on the edges. And Georgia, with a backup quarterback, and both teams' receiving cores have struggled all year, but with a backup quarterback, it's even more at a premium now for Georgia to run the football and not have to throw into the teeth of this Notre Dame secondary that's very good.
Dalton, one of the things with Georgia, and we've noticed it and talked about it on Sports Talk a lot, man, their receivers, they couldn't catch a cold if they were naked in Russia. I mean, they dropped more passes than any big-time program I've ever seen. Now, they're not going there as a two-star recruits. They're getting four- and five-star guys. And I was a big Carson Beck fan before the season started. I don't want to blame it all on him. He has not played up to expectations. But their receiving core, man, they've been lousy most of the year. I think they have one of the largest drop ratios of passes in all of college football. You wouldn't think that, and I think maybe some of it was masked the last couple years because of they had Ladd was there.
Bowers.
Now he's with the Charger. And Brock Bowers, the tight end. Man, that you can't drop passes in a big game, and that has been a major flaw in the Georgia offense.
Absolutely has. I think, look, at times when their passing game has looked better this year, it's when they've involved the tight ends in the backs. When you talk about Oscar Delp and Lawson Lucky, Cash Jones out of the backfield. But no, their receivers, they have to be better. And I think that's the one thing we've learned with how those two guys you mentioned, McConkey and Bowers, the way that they've excelled in the NFL shows you just how darn good they were and how valuable they were for Georgia. So they definitely need guys to step up in this receiving core in this game, because it's not just the drops. They struggle to separate. They've been one of the worst teams in the Power 5 when it comes to separating from man coverage, and that's a huge problem in this game against Notre Dame, who plays a ton of it, and they play it very well. So they have to win their one-on-one matchups and separate first, and then, like you mentioned, they need to catch the football, because, again, it's only going to take you so far that you can ride the tight ends in the backs. At some point, you need your wide receivers to make plays. I think that's something for both of these teams, but you mentioned it. Even when Carson Beck was on the field, these receivers were struggling all season.
Now, Dalton, boy, this is old school and tradition. I'm a traditionalist at times, and it kind of aligned in the postseason in the playoffs, college football playoffs. Pac-12 versus Big Ten. Now, Oregon's in the Big Ten now, but Oregon versus Ohio State come New Year's Day in the afternoon. I watched that whole game. That was very entertaining. On October the 12th, Oregon ended up winning 32-31. I'm a fan of Coach Lanning and what he's done with the Ducks. And so when I look at the second time around, I can tell you this, if Will Howard plays like he played last week, that to me has been the weak link. And if he has that kind of performance, watch out for Ohio State. But I think the most consistent quarterback out of all of the teams, and that's why he was a Heisman Trophy finalist, Oregon quarterback Dylan Gabriel. He passed for 341 yards, and he ran for a 27-yard touchdown in the fourth quarter of the first meeting. So that's why I don't count out the Ducks, is because of the consistent quarterback play with Dylan Gabriel versus Will Howard. If Will Howard could play like he played against Tennessee, watch out for Ohio State. But Dylan Gabriel, the stability in considering transferring and all that, boy, it looks like he's been at Oregon the whole time, even though they had Bo Nix. Dylan Gabriel, to me, has been the most consistent quarterback out of the quarterbacks still playing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And like you mentioned, there's a reason he was a Heisman finalist. And I love that word you mentioned there, stability, right? And I think you could not have gotten a better guy to replace Bo Nix than Dylan Gabriel when he came over from Oklahoma. He gives him such a high floor, right? He completes all the same passes that Nix did last year. He understands the system. It was very easy for him to pick up. He understands when he needs to get the ball in space to his playmakers. I mean, he does. He gives him an extremely high floor. He's got a pretty good offensive line to work with, a loaded group of weapons. And, you know, I think he understands when he can take his chances and when he can't, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing for me, is Dylan Gabriel's always been very good at avoiding turnovers and doing the safe thing. And look, there's a value in just completing passes, right? And you talk about completing them at such a high rate that he does, especially with the receivers that he has. You're absolutely right. And then on the point of Will Howard, I think you're right on that, too. If he plays like he did last week, we're going to get a barn burner of a game. And honestly, outside of the Michigan game, Will Howard's been spectacular in the second half of the season. The Michigan game, they just couldn't block anybody. The offensive line's a real X factor for Ohio State. But when Howard has time in the pocket to get the ball to weapons like Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Abuka, he's been as good as anybody. I think it's really more about the pass protection than it is about Will Howard's composure in this game.
Give me them receivers for Ohio State.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
You give them
Smith
that.
And Abuka?
Yeah, yeah.
Man,
yeah.
You got something there.
Well, and Dalton, when you look at how the playoffs are structured and you can tweak stuff, to me you have to reseed. You got to reward a team like Oregon. I mean, shame on Texas if they don't get to the semifinals playing Arizona State. And the same thing with Penn State. You're playing Boise State. You look at Notre Dame and Georgia, and I'm looking at Oregon and Ohio State. Don't you think they have to reseed if they're going to tweak things? And I guess when you ultimately want it to be fair, but look how tough Oregon, would they've been rewarded to actually to get to the finals if they do.
Yeah, I think more than reseeding as we go, kind of like we do in the NFL, I think they're going to look at the initial process of how, you know, how the conference, the highest ranked conference champions got into the top four, namely, like you mentioned, Boise State and Arizona State, who weren't in the top four of the actual rankings, but by virtue of winning their conference, then got their way up there. They might change that part of it, because I think the top four, if they had done it just purely off the rankings, would have been Oregon, Texas, Georgia, and Penn State in some order. So, you know, I think it did create for a little bit of imbalance when you talk about, okay, Ohio State-Tennessee was the 8-9 matchup, but in the actual rankings, they were 6-7. They got bumped down by two teams that, you know, that came in from behind them to win their conference. So I think it's more about the initial process that they're going to look at. But, you know, kind of my mindset on this, too, with Oregon is you were probably going to have to beat Ohio State anyway at some point. So, you know, if you have to get it over with. Now, it is rough that they'll probably have to play them and you know, likely Texas. But you never know. Arizona State's been raging hot. They could pull an upset, too. But, no, I think that's something they're going to look at, I think, in the initial selection process about how they do the seeding and the bias, you know, when it first starts.
Dalton, one of the things, LSU playing Baylor. And, man, early in the season, well, midway into the season, I wondered if Dave Aranda was going to survive. At Baylor, they had gotten off to a difficult start, and then all of a sudden his offense catches a fire. Now, you wouldn't think that Dave Aranda coach team is noted for their offense, but they played great down the stretch, and especially on the offensive side of the football. Now you're playing an LSU team, they're without their two starting tackles, their top receiver in Kyron Lacy. I think Baylor's got a shot here, a real shot, because of the fact their team is basically intact going up against LSU. LSU's got a lot of pieces of the puzzle that's been pulled away, but it's so funny when Dave was here how much time he would spend watching offenses. As a defensive coach, you would think that he would spend a lot more time on defense, and he would always tell me, no. He said, Mike, I spend most of my time watching other people's offense, which gives me the most problems, and I want that on my team. I think Baylor here, you know, has a legitimate shot because of the fact with LSU's loss, and LSU's defense ain't nothing great home to write about either. I think both teams are like that, but Baylor's offense, how it's played down the stretch, has really been impressive.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And Aranda, I'll tell you what, any team, and we've seen it from a lot of teams this year in the country, if you find the right quarterback, you can get yourself together a good team, right? And I think Sawyer Robertson for Baylor, he's done that. And I think you mentioned about Dave Aranda trying to find what gives him trouble. And it's a great point that, look, defensive coaches, they need to know offense like the back of the hand because they need to know how to be an attack. And Sawyer Robertson gives them a dual threat at quarterback that they haven't had in the last couple of years, right? They kind of had some pocket passers who were kind of ineffective, but Robertson's given him a dual threat on offense, a guy who's very dangerous on things like quarterback draws and gives him that other dimension. Along with Bryson Washington, they're 1,000-yard back in the backfield. He's got multiple threats in the backfield. Robertson's been throwing the ball well downfield all year long. I think it's really been one of those things that is surprising. They're one of the more surprising teams in the Big 12, in a Big 12 that got turned pretty much completely upside down from what the preseason expectations had, right? And Baylor is in that mix with 8 wins this year. So I think he found players that he knows, hey, we can create some conflict, especially in the run game with Sawyer Robertson and Bryson Washington in the backfield, and then they work from there.
I think, Dalton, I'll get your comments on it. I've talked to John Sumrall at Tulane about it. We've heard from Brian Kelly make the same comments that, man, they got to tweak the rule some kind of way here with this transfer portal stuff. Because now, the way you end the season, you don't even have the same team, even if you're playing in a bowl game. And we know eventually this playoff format will jump from 12 to 16, I think, in the very near future. But they've got to be able to do something to keep players there. And I think I don't know exactly how, because of enrollment and how you're getting them into school in the January time frame, but there's got to be something there done that from a transfer portal situation and to be kind of open to jump from one team to the other. We saw Tulane's quarterback leave and he's going to Duke, and then all of a sudden now we have Makai Hughes, their bell cow runner, he's leaving the program. Your thoughts on how this could be done different in the future with the transfer portal?
So the consensus on the problem seems to be the timing of it, right? And you kind of mentioned it with Baylor and LSU, where this one team with the team totally depleted between the portal and draft guys, and there's one team with a bunch of guys coming back, and they're playing with what they have all year. I think we've seen that in a lot of these bowl games. I think one idea that I thought was interesting, you know, that was proposed, I forget where I heard it, was maybe you push the whole timeline back. And you mentioned it. It's a problem when it comes to the academic spring semester, and, you know, the college football playoff runs into the beginning of that and trying to get enrolled and get into school and do all of the, you know, quote-unquote student-athlete things, right, that kind of gets thrown by the wayside in this process. But you wonder if they start going to more of an NFL sort of model where you go, okay, everything's on hold until after the national title game. We have the transfer portal in the spring, almost like the free agency period, and then maybe you push spring ball back into a little more into the summer, say, instead of being in, you know, April or early May, we're talking about spring ball being in June, July, and it's really more of a summer ramp-up period, and you just have one window in the spring, whether that's a 4 or 5 week window, something like that, where, okay, then guys that can declare for the portal, finish the semester and get to their new schools in time for the summer, because that seems to really be the issue with spring ball still being during the spring semester when kids are on campus. It throws off the timing of all of it, and there's still the school aspect of it. So I do wonder if maybe they find a way to push everything back so you don't have, what is it, 4,000 kids or whatever that transferred the day they were allowed to the second the regular season ended. I think that might just be a thing where they have to change the entire off-season calendar.
Yeah, you change off-season calendar. The difference why you can't, you know, people might say, well, look how the NFL does it, but the NFL don't have to go to school.
Right.
And correct. When you look at school, when you look at that, I think obviously you got to take that in consideration. This is what I say. I mean, we're paying them now. The hell with school. Just make them an employee. Just like, okay, we're hiring you, and we're going to pay you to play football. And then you can figure out how you're going to go to school. You know, we can pay for that too. But it's not like student-athlete, that's out the way. that's gone per con.
Yeah, I think that kind of has been squashed.
No, and
completely.
All of a sudden, then you can have a collective bargaining agreement. And then you can negotiate a salary cap and all that. Because right now, the schools will not win an antitrust. And of course, the NCAA will not win.
They've lost millions and millions of dollars.
So that's why I'm telling you, making these players employees, that might end up happening.
Yeah, we'll see. Dalton, we appreciate your time. Dalton Wasserman, college football NFL contributor, as always. Have a great Saturday. Hope to see you soon.
All right,
Dalton. Anytime, guys. I appreciate you, as always.